that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, they just disagree on how.
We're gonna get across that wasteland, and we're gonna do it together.
All episodes available now on Prime Video.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton for the stay.
All right, I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley. That dude.
Yes, sir.
All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself, the most fearless show in sports. Coming up, we'll tell you if we're impressed by Manny Pacquiao's win this weekend. And 1 hour from now, we'll revisit our first SFY Vegas pool party.
Oh, Lord.
But we start with Odell Beckham Jr. The Cleveland Browns superstar receiver Odell Beckham Jr. is a victim of the cruel, unfair, and racist media. You don't believe me? Read the Q&A he did with GQ magazine that was published this morning. In it, OBJ whines about absolutely everything. He compares his on-field passion to Tom Brady's and insinuates there's a racial double standard in how they're perceived. OBJ says Hall of Fame football players turned commentators Chris Carter and Ray Lewis are two-faced because they treat him warmly in person and mildly criticize him when they're on TV. OBJ says black gossip websites speculate about his sexuality and suggest that he's gay. He said, quote, "It makes it worse when it comes from the black community. I feel like everything is a double standard. You want us to support the black community, and then you go out and bash black people for being happy? So someone can't be happy? Someone can't be dancing? Oh, he's always around guys. He's never around girls. I just don't want you to see what woman I'm with, and I don't want you in my personal life. I always try to keep my personal life my personal life. I feel like I don't owe that to anybody." OBJ is a human Twitter feed. His reality is shaped by social media, and nearly every answer he gave in this Q&A is the kind of shallow response you'd find on a typical Twitter thread. There's no nuance, and there's even less substance. He comes off like the typical 25-year-old going through their identity crisis. We all go through it. What's different now is that we share the random empty thoughts that pass through our brain for the world to witness. People like OBJ used to keep diaries. We wouldn't know how shallow and insecure they are until death. Now it's all broadcast over Instagram and Twitter, and now that the mainstream media are addicted to social media traction, magazines like GQ publish clickbait Q&As where young men like OBJ can claim victim status. In my opinion, Julio Jones is a better receiver than OBJ. You don't see the media hounding Julio. You know why? Because Julio doesn't want it and doesn't ask for it. Neither does DeAndre Hopkins. Life is a series of choices and consequences. OBJ made the choice to be the center of attention. He wanted to be on stage, wear one glove and moonwalk. Joe Jackson didn't drag OBJ on stage and make him sing and dance. OBJ is Madonna, the material boy who chose to fly close to the sun because he craved the spotlight. It's hot up there, bro. Don't blame the media for the temperature. You chose to get in the oven. Fox NFL analysts Reggie Bush and TJ Husmanzada. Marcellus, I'll start with you.
Yeah.
Media unfair to OBJ.
No, they're not. And I understand what that connotation, what it means in terms of, like, is it perfect treatment? No. Is it unfair treatment? No. Is it ideal? No. This is a guy that has to understand the machinery that he's dealing with, which is the media. Grandma always says, once you call for attention, you can't hang up, baby. And there was a time where you wanted attention. I was that type of player. I know what it is. Yep. You know,
Everybody wanted it.
I wanted the smoke that came with it. And then some of my teammates who are a little more responsible, who were a little more foresight, were like, that comes at a cost. Mm-hmm. And that's going to come with exaggeration to the negative things you do when they occur. And you just got to know that. But when it's good, it's great. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say this. It's natural to want attention, but be careful when that warps into you needing approval. Mm-hmm. And I learned that the right and hard way.
Yeah.
When you start talking about all this noise and you start to parse through that and start to need approval, why don't they allow me? They do. They are witnessing you. They're watching you. Some are criticizing you. Many are supporting you. But once you start going through that and start to look at the opposites, those who say the cons against you, and start needing that approval, you're going to get lost in your own and be a prisoner of your own success. That's where he is.
And I think to OBJ's point, you have to be willing to accept how much you put yourself out there, right? On the social media side. So, you know, for guys like OBJ, Cam Newton, I think social media has driven our younger athletes to be more focused on their brand than maybe their respective sport first, right? Because you can still work hard and not be all in, right, with your teammates, right? To me, one of the guys I got a chance to be around, Drew Brees, who was all in and was a leader on the field. I used to try to beat him into the locker rooms, into the facilities my rookie year. I would show up at 6 a.m. It'd be one car in the parking lot. It'd be Drew's car. And so to that point, what I'm making is that you can be all in and still not give the proper production on the field. But it also, there's going to have to be some give and take as well. I guess what I'm trying to
do. I mean, for me, it's like, it's what you, everybody wants the attention. You have to take the good with the bad.
Yeah.
And that, because you have 13 million followers on Instagram, and that's because of the way the media has treated you. And I would say it's more good than bad.
Of course.
When you lose and you put yourself out there, then it's going to be, you just have to take it for what it is.
Yeah.
Okay, they're talking bad about me. That doesn't mean they don't like you.
Right.
They're just stating what they perceive to be the facts. And I said this, sir, when you need other people to validate how you feel about yourself, mm-hmm. I don't care how you feel about me. I might not like that you're criticizing me, but that's not going to control how I go about my day and how I feel.
Yeah.
And so when the media treats you well, it's great. You love them. But when they say something negative about you, it's, oh, what are they? No, you just got to deal with both. You got to take the good with the bad.
He says he wants to keep his personal life his personal life. I don't really buy it.
Yeah.
And I'll say this because he's on the cover of GQ magazine, and he's addressing y'all know far better than I do. No, you don't, because I'm a journalist too. So we both know. We both know. These things are negotiated in terms of when you're on the cover of a magazine, the questions that are going to be asked, the topics that are going to be addressed, that's all decided beforehand.
Right. Mm-hmm.
He's talking about his sexuality and how websites and stuff treat. He's just feeding the machine more. There's going to be more conversation. And so I don't buy this that, oh, I'm unfairly treated. I want to keep my private life. No. You just did an interview that gave everybody the reason, the justification to talk about your private life and virtually anything they want to talk about you.
Say it, man. A lot of this is selective perception. A lot of this is psychology 101. What are you paying attention to? What are you concerned with? Mm-hmm. We are all guilty of this one. Trust me. You put a post up there, get 10,000 likes. You got 38 people hating on it.
Yeah.
You got 10,000 people saying, I love this.
Yeah.
And guess what you will respond to?
The 38.
One of them 38s. What a 38. Like, what's up, dog? Let's go to war. And it's crazy. We all get caught up in this. Eldale needs to understand. Ain't that true?
I do that all the time.
When it's great, sweeter, bro. Odell is an amazing dude. I love Odell as a person and what I've heard of him as a teammate. I got one example. ESPYs, a few years ago, I'm sitting there working. Odell, when he comes in, it's kind of LeBron-like. You see the smoke and the storm and the dust kick up and the
crowd entourage.
Everything changes. It's a climate change.
Yeah.
And then he walks through. And then my daughter, she loves sports. She's a track athlete at UConn. One player sits at the top of that pyramid. OBJ. I'm like, I am not going through that firestorm to go get OBJ's attention. It may not happen. You know what? Long story short, lock eyes. He's like, what's up, man? How you doing? my daughter, man, you make her life. People pushing him. Literally, publicists, people, go, Odell. He's like, gotta give him a moment. Took a picture of my daughter. This is something that he does countless in terms of what he's done for his teammates and looking out. But he has to understand, with the good comes the bad, and they're gonna pour it on heavy when things are not in their favor.
And people always ask me, if you could go back and change one thing about your career, what would that be? The one thing I will go back and change is paying attention to too much to what I thought people thought about me. Because the more I bought into it, the more it affected me. And the times where it was bad, it was 10 times bad because I allowed it to live through me, right? And it came out on the football field or at home. I was one of the worst people to be around. So that's why I always tell guys is football is what you do. It's not who you are. Yeah. And the faster you can understand that, the faster you just won't care about the things that are people saying about you, because most of the time, whoever's writing those negative comments about you, they have never been in your shoes. Mm. And that's why you shouldn't care.
Mm. He's 25 years old.
26, I think.
He has a lot of maturing to do. And as he matures, he will be a different person in a few years than he is today. Yep. These things, some of them will still affect him and maybe bother him, because nobody wants to be disliked, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Hell no.
But it won't affect him to where he's talking about it in interviews anymore.
Yeah.
Because he knows, as he matures, he knows, okay, I've been in the league 8 years now. I can't please everybody. Yeah. I can't satisfy everybody. And so he'll mature from that perspective, and you'll see a different person. But when you're young and you come in, Reggie's probably one of the few people had social media been around when he got to the league, would have had the type of recognition and acclaim that OBJ had. He's one of the few.
Right.
And so luckily it wasn't around, but you take the good with the bad, man. Yeah. Like what you said, your daughter wanted that picture, as my girls do as well, because of what the media has built him up to be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you like that adulation and that recognition.
Take that
so deal with the, don't worry about the 38 dislikes in the back. That is the truth.
I want to be careful how I say this, but I think it was the Unabomber talked about how technology and the technological advances were destroying our society. Mm-hmm. And if you watch this show, one of the themes that I have going is like, hey, man, this social media thing is an invention that I don't think we fully understand.
Yeah.
And that's why I go back to people used to keep diaries, their personal thoughts to themselves.
Yep.
And now I don't know if anybody does it because it's just your Twitter thread is your diary.
Yeah.
And now you're giving your most inner thoughts and for other people to pass judgment on. And some of this stuff should just remain private.
Mm. Hey, Whitlock, that was a great line when you said that. Here's the thing that I want him to understand, and I learned this the hard way.
Through your counseling.
Through my... Bruh, we all played the game.
Yeah.
But there's a game within the game that Odell is playing, and it's called the fame game. Mm-hmm. And I bring up this example because I always use this to give me clarity and to humble me. Tom Hanks, who has this trailer out right now, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, he's probably the biggest actor in the world, right? Last time you heard any smoke about Tom Hanks, last time TMZ followed him out of the restaurant, last time all this dust kicks up when Tom Hanks is in the building. You know why? Because he's not playing that game within that game. He's saying, I'm playing the production game. Movie out, movie out, movie out. There are people who are lesser than him who want to play the game within the game and get all this attention about him. And it brings me to this, to understand that once you choose to play that other game, you got to know the rules of that game. Yeah. It's not just how many catches, how many touchdowns.
Swam by everybody rules, not just your rules.
Right, and he doesn't know this. Dapper Dan said it best, and I just heard this the other day. He said, you can't be in it and not of it. You want to be in the fame game, but not be of it? That means you care about what other people think, because all you trying to do is get that kind of attention and seeking it. It's a complex world, but once you choose it, you got to live in it.
Reggie Bush and TJ Houshmandzadeh are back. Time now for a big story. Let's move to Las Vegas.
Oh, yes.
Where Manny Pacquiao handed Keith Thurman the first loss of his career Saturday night with a split decision win that gave Manny the WBA super welterweight title. Thurman had promised to send the 40-year-old into retirement with this fight, but Pacquiao knocked him down in the first round and was in control most of the night. I'm going to keep it 1,000% transparent. Don Julio knocked me out, and I missed my fight.
Yes!
These three guys.
Oh, Don Julio knocked him out in the first round.
These three guys went to the fight.
Yes.
More impressed with Pac-Man or Thurman?
Boy, it was funny. It was about 6 o'clock. Wiley, Wiley, here are the tickets. I was like, Willock, you coming? Oh, I can't take it. Boy, went to bed at 7 o'clock. I love it. I'm actually looking at this one and disappointed in Keith Thurman. Look, Pacquiao threw his hands like he's thrown his hands before. He's an 8-time champion in 8 different divisions. You know why? Because he can throw them hands. That speed that he has actually kills. And that's great for Pacquiao. But Keith Thurman, you didn't have more impressive moments against a guy that you were bigger than. Mm-hmm. You could have overpowered. As you would say, TJ, he should have got inside more. I just thought that he could have dictated terms a little greater than he did. You had the layoff. You had the tune-up. You knew what you were dealing with in Pacquiao. And he didn't have the proper response. I saw some self-correction. He stopped backing up with his hands down, which is like boxing 101. But beyond that, I just thought that he would bring more animus to the fight than I saw.
Especially as a young guy, right? Like, I thought he would have brought a lot more energy to the fight. When the fight first started, from the first time the bell rang, Pacquiao controlled the fight. When he got that first knockdown in the very beginning, stayed aggressive throughout the fight. To me, I'm more impressed by watching a 40-year-old Pacquiao put on a show like this, because at that age level, to be able to go out there with the young guys and still hold your own, and not only hold your own, but to be able to dominate and control the fight, to me, that's extremely impressive.
But see, why I'm not impressed by that is because you always got to compliment it with the birth certificate. Here's the thing. Errol Spence don't give a damn how old you are. Right? Sean Porter don't care how old you are. So I got to be careful to watch a guy who's being impressive at 40, but in the absolute sense, are you impressive when you get in there with the killers? Mm-hmm. He was impressive with the speed work, but other guys are going to neutralize that a little more.
I'm disappointed in Keith Thurman. I don't believe a 30-year-old should lose to a 40-year-old in any sport, period.
So you hate Tom Brady.
No. That's a one-on-one, a boxing, track and field, where it's just you versus me. A 30-year-old should not lose to a – now, did he have the amount of respect for Pacquiao that he should have? I'm going to say no. You see Adrian Broner. Oh, we was out in the casino till 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Mm.
You got a big fight coming up, bro. Mm. You need to be getting your rest. Mm-hmm. Did he have that respect, that fear that he could lose? Pacquiao overwhelms people, with his hand speed, but he beats you with his feet.
Yeah.
He gives you so many different angles. He steps around. Like, when he knocked Keith down, Keith backs up with his hands down, and Manny steps to him. And normally, Keith can get out of range because he's so athletic. Well, Manny's feet are so good that as you're stepping back, he's stepping with you. Mm-hmm. And he was able to drop him. And so for me, I didn't think Pacquiao dominated the fight. I thought Keith Thurman did show – he showed a lot of heart because he was taking some punches. Mm-hmm. And he came back. He didn't do enough to win, but he did make it a really good fight. But he – 30 years old, you should not let a 40-year-old beat you. Not in boxing. Not at all.
Well, I'm going to use the birth certificate to say – because my expectations were low, man.
Right.
I thought Thurman was going to take – I thought he was going to knock him out, to be quite honest with you. And so for Pacquiao to get it in the first ring, knock this dude down, win this fight, I think split decision. It shouldn't have been a split decision from all the everything I've read and heard about it. Pacquiao won the fight. And for him to reinvigorate his career at 40 years old, I can't help but be impressed, Marcellus.
I like it. I love it. It is really giving juice to this division again, especially how it's going to play out. We got Spence. We got Porter coming up. Mm-hmm. See how that plays out. Pacquiao's in the mix. Floyd always sitting there like, in my back pocket, if I say unretired, that's a mega fight, whoever my contestant is. That said, beginning of the fight was different than the end of the fight. The energy and the moments were controlled by Pacquiao. Pacquiao looked like the younger guy. He took it to him. But then if you look at the CompuBox, you look at the punches landed, and you start looking at the latter rounds, Thurman showed up. He self-corrected a lot of his
early ills. He showed heart, man.
That's why it was an amazing fight. Best fight I've ever went to, witnessed, attended. Yeah. That was my favorite fight. But it just didn't go the way as it should have. It should have been Thurman dictating, using more.
Exactly.
Pacquiao using the speed, but then getting neutralized in speed because of youth, and then we're going to see how it goes.
When you're out of the ring as long as Thurman was, it's tough. Boxing is a timing and rhythm type of sport. Mm. Errol Spence, Sean Porter, Terrence Crawford. Oh, they're the best three in that division.
Oh, we know that.
You got some young guys. I'm a big boxing fan for Philadelphia. You kick a kid by the name of Jaren Boots Ennis. Nobody probably knows who he is, but I've seen him fight 4 or 5 times. He's another kid that can really fight. But Pacquiao, he has to be careful with who he picks next. But I will say this.
Why do you say that, though, before you say this?
Oh, because you fight one of them young guys that's been active, that's been in the ring,
right,
that they're going to bring the fight to you.
CJ, earlier in the day, we were at a pool party, and I overheard you telling several people that you thought you could beat Pacquiao.
There's no think to it.
Uh-oh.
TJ, you don't want to walk them comments
now,
back?
No, TJ, not at all. Now, and now TJ, in a boxing ring. In a boxing ring? No, they just said in a street fight.
Oh,
not a boxing ring. No.
And then after all the bottles came?
No.
Were you sober of mind?
I had zero drinks in Vegas. Not one sip. In a street fight, ain't nobody 140 pounds whooping me. Nobody.
You know what?
Nobody.
I say the same thing, but you know what, man?
Not all you UFC fighters, don't come talking trash to me.
Y'all different.
Yeah, leave
they
me alone.
Fight. You got to respect their precision. And look, I know you trained in boxing. I know you're astute in your boxing knowledge. The precision, it's not going to be that, oh, you're just going to be able to grapple. I remember Sugar Shane Mosley, I said the same thing. I almost set up a fight. Lord, I almost set up 2 fights. Sugar Shane Mosley was one, but we kind of talked it out. And he was just like, we were in studio. He said, just defend yourself for 5 seconds. I said, oh, what? Go. I got tatted up so hard right here. He was just going, it's a whole different animal, man. I think he was just
like, Whitlock and Wiley, Reggie Bush and TJ Houshmandzadeh are back. It's returned to the NFL, where the NFL announced its decision not to suspend Tyreek Hill over allegations that the Chiefs receiver had broken his 3-year-old son's arm. Law enforcement decided not to press charges, and the NFL followed their lead. But the same day, the league also decided to suspend Seattle defensive lineman Jaren Reed 6 games over allegations of domestic violence for which he was never charged or arrested. The question here is the NFL's discipline policy just way too inconsistent? And I think it is. I don't think this makes sense. I felt like they didn't suspend Tyreek Hill because there were no criminal charges pressed. And I thought, okay, maybe they'll go with that standard because I would kind of prefer that. But then when they turn around and do this to Jaren Reed, I just don't get it. It just doesn't make sense to me.
It makes sense to me, but we got to fly a lot lower than we are. I think one thing that happens in any trial, any allegation, that we fly at too high altitude. So think about if you've ever been accused, alleged, been in court, anything. The summary of judgment, just the synopsis of the case, is usually 100-plus pages, let alone the testimony, which is thousands of pages. And I will testify right now, I am not doing that dirty work per allegation, per case. And I don't think anyone is. So when we start talking about the devil is in the details, a lot of us don't know those details. But we sit high and say, that looks like that, so that should be that. Mm-hmm. Punishment should be consistent, but the practical case and the process should be very inconsistent because all the details are different. So this is a different animal than what Zeke went through, and this is a different animal than what Reed's going through. Like, they're all different entities that we're not privy to knowing all of those subtleties. So in that respect, I'm saying I'm going to respect Roger Goodell and their judgment. I will say this. Thank you, Roger Goodell, for being the guy who seems like now I'm going to be someone who grows the game and not the goon. That's always merged and been blurry for me, Roger Goodell, being the enforcer and the executor of these things while still trying to be the executive that grows the game. The two doesn't mix, and I'm glad he's making a different example.
Yeah, I think the NFL needs to bring in a third party, somebody else to handle these kinds of cases, because when you just look at what's happening with Jaren Reed, and you mash that up against what just happened with Tyreek Hill, it seems very unfair. And we don't know all the details that happened. The only thing that we do know is the 3-year-old's child's arm got broken. So the 3-year-old is the one who is the biggest loser out of all this. And I also don't believe that if Tyreek Hill didn't do it, he shouldn't be suspended for it. But the audio tapes sound very bad. And that's the part that is hard to get over. And when you listen to them, and it just makes you think that something did happen. We just don't know who is the culprit of it. But at the end of the day, the NFL definitely needs to bring in a third party because there's just too much inconsistencies.
On its head, it looks very, very inconsistent. I mean, you look at it and it's like public opinion. Yeah. Tyreek Hill is getting suspended.
Right.
The NFL don't play. You suspend Ezekiel Elliott, he didn't get charged. You suspend Jimmy Smith for text messages that supposedly he sent to his girlfriend and whatnot. And so when you look at it, it was like, oh, Tyreek Hill, somebody did something to his son.
Yeah.
Whether it was him.
Well, I want to clear that up. They're saying the child fell in an accident and that's how he broke his arm. So we cannot say definitively that someone did something to the child. Now, I do think the police or the prosecutor in Kansas City feels something happened, but they couldn't prove it, and that's why they walked away.
With the Jaren Reed thing, we had heard nothing about this, and then boom, you're suspended.
Right. Yeah.
And so it does look very inconsistent, but it's what Marcellus said. We do not know the details. We do not know what's going on behind the scenes. We do not know exactly what's transpiring and what actually did happen.
Yeah.
And so to me, what Roger Goodell is doing is saying, I don't care what public opinion is. I'm going to read this. I'm going to look through this, and I'm going to do the job that I see fit. And for that, you applauded because everybody thought Tyreek Hill was going to get suspended. Everybody. He looked at the facts that he saw and was like, he doesn't deserve a suspension, so I applaud him for that.
Here's one of the details that we may not know, and so this is a little speculation on my part, but it felt like the Tyreek Hill's fiance, baby mama, girlfriend, whatever, defended him, I think, defended him in this case. We don't know what the young lady involved in the Jaren Reed, what was her position?
Right.
Did she have a conversation with the commissioner? Was she more aggressive than Tyreek Hill? Those are the kind of details I think you're talking about that we don't know anything about. And we also don't know what kind of disciplinary action, unrelated to the domestic violence deal, that the Seattle Seahawks may have had with Jaren Reed that we're not privy to. Maybe there were other factors involved, but I agree with Reggie. I've been saying it forever. I just wish Roger Goodell would step away.
They're never going to do that. He wants to be in charge of...
I'm not sure. Maybe he did at one point.
I'm with you, Whitlock. I think that was yesterday.
Then why hasn't he done it? If he doesn't want to be in charge, I mean, that's very simple.
See, you ain't never been divorced, but getting divorced is hard, man.
Nobody up your ass.
No.
Right? Okay.
But I will say this. Losing face, you got to be careful of that human capital that you lose in that transaction. Like it sounds easy. Just stop doing it. But you've been doing it for a reason that is hard to now detach from. And it's part of his power. So I will say that about this case in particular, there are contradictions in just the testimony that is public. The stuff that we've heard have been inconsistencies. Yeah. One time he's being accused, one other time sounds like he's saying, did I do it? And the audio tape is suggesting that he didn't. I will look at it from this vantage point and say that when you're looking at these type of cases, just make sure you understand the NFL doesn't have the power of subpoena.
Yeah.
That means whatever the police offer up, they get.
You know that ain't never mattered.
It matters, but when you get into situations where there's conflict or lack of support or lack of witness, then you need something to dive into.
If the NFL really wants to do this, they have an easy out now. What? It's a new CBA being negotiated.
Yes.
You can save face and say, as part of our agreement with the Players Association, we're going to appoint a third party now.
Yeah,
so now you can save face without giving up that power, but you really did give it up.
I'll say this. The risk that Roger Goodell took, which I'm going to applaud him for. Mm-hmm. He took the risk. Because if in a year, two, three, 4 years, if Tyreek Hill is involved in anything, that's going to fall back. Oh, Roger Goodell overlooked, didn't take action here. That's why I thought, and I'm going to give him credit, if he felt like he did the right thing, but I thought if he gave him a 1 or 2 game suspension, a light suspension, he could save face for himself. But again, if you listen to that tape, Tyreek Hill has some issues to work through.
Sure.
Yeah.
Whether or not
whether
or not he broke child's arm or whatever, he's got some issues to work through in terms of how he disciplines his child, how he interacts with women, things like that. And so Roger Goodell took a risk here. I hope he's right, and I hope Tyreek Hill, he issued a statement saying he's going to live up, be a better role model, and all those things. For Roger Goodell's sake, I hope he's right.
With Kizik hands-free shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy-on, easy-off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
All right, welcome back to Speak for Yourself. The most fun you can have talking sports.
No masterpiece.
Yeah. And partying in Vegas. Grays Beach Club, want to send them a shout out.
Man.
Excellent host. All right,
Young.
Whitlock and Wiley, Reggie Bush and TJ Housmanzada are back. Time to get antisocial. All right, Darnell, what you got?
I made it back alive, y'all, my first trip.
Big Swole!
I made it back alive,
Vegas
baby.
Ain't the same, though, since Big Swole came
ain't
through.
The same, man.
That was your first time to Vegas.
My first time.
That was your first time to Vegas? Yeah.
You couldn't tell?
Shut things down, Dana.
Did he? What?
This is the first time in 3 days he's had a shirt on. Go ahead,
Darnell. All right, y'all, we're going to start off in the boxing ring. Everyone came out to Vegas to watch the big fight between Pacquiao and Thurman. My guys, Marcellus, TJ, and Reggie had the floor seats. If you look up towards the nosebleeds, you might even see me up there. But anyway, as we all know, Pacquiao went on to win the fight, and now everyone is wondering what's next for Manny. Mm. But guys, be honest. Would you want to see a Pac and Floyd part two?
Hell yes. The first one, let's be real, whatever you want to believe or not, Pacquiao said he had a shoulder injury. Pacquiao didn't throw them hands, so I could put two and two together and say, interesting. It's enough intrigue in that storyline alone to want to see them go at it again. We all got low standards, let's be real. I gave $100 to watch Floyd fight Conor McGregor. Once I did that, I was open to anything Floyd does, because I'm a Floyd fan. I love Floyd Mayweather, so I want to see him go out there and settle this score for real.
I want to see Floyd fight some real boxers. Like, the last two fights, he fought some dude out in, I don't know where they was, Japan, Asia, somewhere.
Oh, they ain't count.
That ain't count, right? I want to see Floyd fight Canelo. How about that?
No, don't do
that.
He already beat Canelo.
No, fight him again. He caught Canelo while he was young, right? I don't want to see Pacquiao and Floyd fight each other. They both old. And both, it's going to be a boring fight.
TJ does not want to see that fight. Floyd hadn't fought in a while.
Right.
Pacquiao has been active. And, oh, my shoulder was hurt. You weren't throwing punches because you know Floyd was going to time you.
Yeah.
And you didn't want that. Yeah, it will be the same thing. If he loses, he'll make another excuse. But Floyd has been out of the ring way too long.
Yeah. Well, hold on, though. Right. Why are you so confident, though, if Floyd's been out of the ring, Keith Thurman out of the ring a couple years, and he's in his 30s,
right,
and Pacquiao called him slipping. I didn't like the first fight. It was too boring. Marcellus reminds me of a great point. Pacquiao says he was hurt.
It's going to be more the same.
You know what's funny? One, we all went to this fight with one old guy in the ring, right? And then Keith Thurman, who we were like, it's your turn. But it's somebody else's turn always, and it's Floyd Mayweather. So you guys are sounding like how everyone said about Conor McGregor. I don't want to watch that fight.
Oh, I'll watch it.
And guess what? It set records.
It was a boring fight, though.
Okay, but we don't know that before this. I didn't think this fight was going to be as exciting as it was.
I knew McGregger fight was going to be boring.
Okay,
there's no way he was going to be boring.
What were your expectations going into this
you
fight?
You didn't know this fight was going to be that.
No, I know it's going to be like that.
Right. Nah. So Floyd Pacquiao, and Pacquiao actually is not hurt, and actually throws his hands, and Floyd is forced to go into his bag. You don't think that'd be exciting?
Floyd will beat him. Mayweather will beat him. He'll win the fight just because he has great timing. But he's been out of the ring a while. Keith Thurman took this fight because this was his first big payday.
Right.
And he was like, he's 40 years old.
Yeah.
I'm a parking. Yeah. And that didn't happen.
I'm going to tell you the thing y'all missing.
Left the car on.
I'm going to say the thing you're missing, TJ, and again, because you're just evaluating it from a fight perspective. The reason why I'm for it, and normally I would be against it, I just think the festivities would be so off the charts.
Off the charts.
Again.
And economically great for all involved.
No, just the weekend of Floyd Pac 2 with Pacquiao putting on this kind of performance. The stars are going to come back out again.
Stop.
It's going boxing to me is one of the greatest weekends in all of sports.
You know what happened, Jason? If Floyd fights this year, then he'll for sure fight Pacquiao next year. Because Pacquiao has stated, I'm not fighting again this year. So if Floyd has a fight this year, some type of tune-up, then
Floyd doesn't do tune-ups. It has to be a mega.
Man,
it's going to be $300-400 million on the line when he fights Pacquiao. He doesn't even want you to see what he's going to do.
I've never been in a ring like these boxers do and fight for a living. But when they say timing and rhythm matters,
oh yeah,
Floyd is great, but Pacquiao is great too.
We're not in the right emotional space. I swear this is Floyd Connor. I swear this is Pacquiao Floyd. It's 7 years too late when you don't have Ticketmaster hitting you up saying, you want to go to Floyd Pacquiao too? When that actually is a reality, when Fox is like, yo, we got the fight, y'all want to go floor seats? When that's a reality, that's when the juice kicks in. Yeah. I'm just privileged to know it right now. I don't need to know what's going to happen. It's going to be exciting.
All right. Next!
All right, man. We can move on to the highlight of our Vegas weekend. The pool party was definitely a success.
Hey.
People came out to Dre's to party with us, and everyone had a good time. Marcellus did this thing on the ones and twos. Mm. Uncle Jimmy was being Uncle Jimmy. Mm. And Whitlock was, let's just say, Mr. Don Julio got the best of him. But guys, who was the life of the pool party? Marcellus, Uncle Jimmy, or Whitlock?
Without a doubt, it's Uncle Jimmy. Come on, man.
He was clowning.
He had the taco hair all out.
He had the silk robe, silk shorts.
Right. 110 degree weather.
Right. I can't vote, I guess, because I'm one of the
contestants. No, you can vote.
He has somebody auntie wig.
You can vote. I'm not going Uncle Jimmy. Let me go first.
Okay.
I'm not going Uncle Jimmy.
The highlight of this event,
and Dre's Beach Club was great. There was a lot of great highlights. Marcellus, you killed it, DJ.
Respect.
That was my first time seeing you work the ones and twos and totally exceeded my expectations.
Yeah, because that could have went the other way.
Yeah.
It easily went the other way.
I'm a connoisseur of pool parties.
Liven up the crowd.
The crowd was rocking.
No question.
Oh,
again, because what happens at these deals, before the headliner comes on and Ty Dolla $ign comes on, it's cool, but it ain't hype.
Yeah.
It ain't hype.
You hype the crowd, you know, not just working a microphone, but with the, and just the music was, you know, because it catered more to my era of
music. Yeah,
yeah,
I'm making sure we got some.
It worked.
My 20-minute set turned into 2 hours?
Thank you.
Yeah.
That says it all.
This was supposed to be 20 minutes?
Yes.
20 minutes. I'm going to get in and out of that thing so I get that hydration going.
Oh, yeah, that's the ultimate sign of respect.
Keep it going.
Yeah, it was really, really dull.
Okay.
Then Marcellus got on there. He was talking to him. It was like, I'm going to play this, talk to him. So everything he was saying was leading up into the song that he was. Yeah.
I was going to vote Whitlock, but you can't take a nap at a pool party.
That might be why.
But, hey, Marcel, he bounced back, though, dude.
He bounced back.
Because it ain't never over.
It's never over.
Well, hold for 1 second.
Bounced back and didn't make it to the fight.
It was a short recovery. But look. Wait till y'all get to be 52, sitting out in that 100-degree heat.
Man.
And they keep feeding you Don Julio.
Man.
You're going to need a little nap, too.
You see me and LeVar with the knee brace on.
Oh, man. Y'all look at me. Him and LeVar out there like they 75, 80 years old, bro.
Damn, they're hot, dog. Hey, the devil had a lemonade stand out there. It was so hot. I was like, it was on fire. And then Whitlock's sitting there, so this is the scene, y'all. This is like the bottles are there.
Yeah.
It's like some tenders and nuggets, and then Whitlock like just leaning on everything.
Hey, but you know what?
No.
For a minute, you didn't know he was asleep, though. He had his shades on, and he was just like this.
Like, Whit.
Yeah, you didn't know.
Then he woke up on 10. He woke up ready to go. Look at that's him. Hey, just waking up.
He woke up like a kid that felt like he was getting left at home or something.
That was the best, man. That was a highlight.
Now, there was one mystery that happened at the pool party.
Mm.
I saw Reggie's appearance. A lot of people missed it.
Odell Beckham.
Yeah, bro.
No, that's that superstar
I'm
stuff.
I'm still right
you
next
and Odell.
To
Odell.
First of all,
he
still
did
right,
stand next to me.
I'm still right next
that's real.
To Marcellus for about a good 30 minutes.
Yeah, in the DJ booth. He was.
In the DJ booth.
I seen him.
You saw him. A lot of people didn't.
But good 30 minutes.
Reggie. Appreciate you coming.
Come on, man.
I think you played it right.
You know, this dude, he went to Playboy Mansion as a junior.
In high school.
He was in that thing as a freshman.
Like, I'm out.
All right. Yeah. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. Darnell, take it away.
All right, guys, I think it's safe to say my first trip to Vegas was a success. Had a great time at the pool party and at, you know, Dre's the whole nine. But you guys know I'm getting married, you know, sometime soon, and got some guys up here that are currently married. I want to ask you, like, how many times should a married man visit Vegas?
Never. You should never go.
Wow.
Oh,
we gotta keep it real.
Never. By yourself? Never.
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
Boy, that was the first and last time you will ever go to Vegas.
Hey, I definitely heard it when I got
there. Did anybody catch he is gone already from I have a date to sometime soon? Like, you used to have a date. Now he's like,
it's a long weekend, Marcellus.
Sometime soon.
Sometime soon.
Next
May.
May 8th.
May
8th. Hey, man. Reggie gave you the best advice.
Never.
I don't know if you can keep it. I don't know if it's realistic. Vegas is amazing. I went with my wife.
Yeah.
And it was a smart play. many a levels. But if you don't go with your wife, it's some vet rules. Mm-hmm. You got to know, one, you're going to get caught with that camera. That camera phone everywhere. Mm-hmm. So be careful where you're at. You know, everybody want to take that group picture. Find the right place to sit in that group
picture.
Stand
in that group picture.
I saw you, Marcellus.
In the right place.
Get in the front of the group pictures.
Or away from
You got to get in the front and take the knee.
It's a tough place, man, because everybody there for one reason, to act the donkey and forget about it when they get home. So I don't have great advice.
As an unmarried man, I think a married man should go as often as he wants with his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, there's a lot of great things you can do as couples. Obviously, going to the fight.
Yep.
Obviously, going to shows.
Yep.
Obviously, going to pool party if that's what you want to do.
Exactly.
But you should also keep in reserve, get out of jail free card. that you and your fellas can go at least, you know, once every other year. you know,
yeah,
as
build
long as the in. Behavior during
it
the
right.
12 months. Yeah,
right. Build every other year.
That's not right, though. It probably is every other year. Y'all get out, go for a couple days.
Yeah.
Other than that, go with your wife. I didn't go with my wife.
Right.
That will be the last time I don't go with my wife. But
me and my wife and TJ were besties.
Yeah, hey, no.
I was like, TJ.
I was third willing. I was like, hey, I'm with y'all. All right. Yeah. Yeah.
We kicked it tough, right?
Yeah, I was, how would I, embarge, you know, on their date night. I'm like, all right, they over there. I'll stay on over
there. Nah, yeah. It was all love.
I was like their adopted son or something.
Right. Ain't nothing wrong with that, man.
Right, you had a good time?
I had a great time, man, but I was smart. You know what I mean? I was chilling, but I had a great time. I'm definitely going to go again, but it sounds like I can't go next year.
Nah.
I got to do every other year, so yeah. I got to go to the party after that.
Yeah.
And they probably do like allow you to wear your shirt in Vegas, Darnell.
It's not 110-degree weather with.
Yeah. Hey, tell him you work too hard. You got to show that thing off sometime.
Yeah. No.
Uncle Jimmy did it. You can do it too.
Yeah, that's right. Why I'm saying.
That's why he said don't do it. Hey, you have to be careful, Darnell. Like, how many times you
gonna
wear?
There you go.
How many times you gonna wear white to the barbecue? Sooner or later, you gonna get something on you, right? You can go to Vegas by yourself, but sooner or later,
that
starts to come and it starts to work.
White
to
a
white shirt clean, all right? Now I'm gonna keep the white shirt clean,
brother. Whitlock and Wiley, Reggie Bush and TJ Husmanzada are back. Let's return to Odell Beckham Jr. He did a lengthy interview with GQ this week, which gave him the chance to complain about pretty much everything, including how the Giants handled his trade to Cleveland, a decision he still appears to be angry about, saying, quote, I felt disrespected because I felt like I was the main reason at keeping that brand alive. They were getting primetime games still as a 5-11 team. Why? Because people want to see the show. You want to see me play. That's just real rap. I felt disrespected. They weren't even man enough to even sit me down to my face and tell me what's going on.
Mm.
All right, the question here is, do you think being disrespected by the Giants will fuel OBJ to a great season this year?
Sounds emotional over a transaction. And we've all been there, at least I know I have.
Mm-hmm.
The old school used to always say, if you make it, they're going to take it. So it was just that simple. Soon as you start becoming the man, somehow, some way, they'll figure this out. And if you've ever studied the game, when I saw Joe Montana in a Chiefs uniform and Bruce Smith gone, and I'm like, Jerry Rice is playing for which team now? That's part of the territory, part of that success. I suggest a greater motivation for Odell, because I don't think the disrespected card is the best card in his hand. The best one is to prove that he didn't need
the juice from the Big Apple to be Odell, to be the baller he is, to be the man he is, to not just be a Broadway star with blonde hair, but to go anywhere and get this going, to get this rolling. He talks about having a 5-11 team in their prime time. You're in Cleveland now. You landed in this prime time. Mm-hmm. Let's see how that goes. And I think that will land greater for his image and his legacy than talking about something that's tired, like, oh, man, they treated me wrong and they didn't talk to me on the way down. That's just how the game goes.
It's exactly. And I know guys who've gotten cut for way less and way worse. I've seen a guy get cut on the bus on the way to the game. So wait until the first time he gets cut. That's going to be a real shocker if he's mad about this. But you have to understand that this is a business. It's a business first, right? The part that he said about the brand and keeping the brand alive, that part I have the issue with, because at the end of the day, it is a team sport. I know you were maybe the draw of that team, but also at the same time, there are other guys there as well. And so you can't be so focused on, well, it was because of me. Because at the end of the day, if it was because of you, y'all didn't even get to the playoffs, right? And so I hope he takes all the disrespect, the negative comments, whatever hate that he feels, and ball it up and use it as fuel to come out and play bigger and better this year, because I do believe he has an opportunity to do something similar to what we did in New Orleans, and that's to change the way that people think about the Cleveland Browns.
When you, number one, it's never personal. It's just business. And that's how he has to look at it. The number one, the Giants, you can't sit any player of his stature down and say, we might possibly trade you. Because now if you don't, you're going to have that animosity towards the people. Oh, you was thinking about you. So that's why we're not going to give you a heads up. We're just going to do it or we're not going to do it. Right. That's why Gettleman, oh, he's not going anywhere. But behind the scenes, I need to get rid of this guy, because if it doesn't happen, I don't want a guy that's disgruntled on the team. He has to perform for himself. When you're using motivations of others to fuel you, that's going to die down. We talked about you have to do it because you want to be great. You desire to be great, and that's what he's doing. I mean, he out here working hard. He's out here in L.A. working hard. Now, whether that translate to a great year for himself and for Cleveland is a different story. But Cleveland, they were going to be in primetime games without him this year because of the way they finished the season. Now it's just more emphasis on it. Now it's just more icing on the cake for it. Yeah. It's going to be interesting. I believe they're going to have a great season. But if things don't go well, he's probably going to get the blame because of all of this.
I think that going back to what we talked about earlier about Odell's reality is shaped by social media. And that's why he thinks they were getting primetime games because of Odell Beckham Jr. Because social media doesn't tell you, like, oh, no, the Giants are one of the oldest, most historic franchises in the history of football, in the history of sports.
Story.
That brand, far exceeds the Odell Beckham brand. But if he goes to his Twitter feed, it won't feel that way. He's the reason. No, it's the Giants. It's the New York market. That's why they were getting the primetime games. And so here's another reality that he may be avoiding. Jarvis Landry on the other side. Kareem Hunt in the backfield. Nick Chubb in the backfield. They got one of the best young tight ends in football. His numbers may back up. And it'll be interesting to see, because I think if they have a properly functioning winning team, they win 10, 11 games, his numbers are going to back up.
Yeah.
I wonder if he'll be happy. So
if we think they're going to have a winning season, what you think happens in the last 5-6 minutes of that game? What are they doing? They running the ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So your numbers are for sure going to drop if you're winning.
Right.
Right.
And so less pass attempts.
5-11 allows you to run that 9 route at the end of the fourth quarter.
You get about 3 or 4 catches per game, 40 to 50 yards per game in garbage time.
Yeah. Right.
Because you're playing catch up and the defense is giving it to you. If you're winning games, now the Kareem Hunts, the Chubbs, they get those carries at the end of the game, because now it's 4-minute offense. Mm. So somebody's going to be unhappy, and if you're winning, you better keep it close to the vest and not show that.
Yeah.
That's the key.
It's amazing. Like, Odell, such a good guy, man. I'm telling you, like, anyone who's been around him, you can see that it's a good dude.
I've talked to him, and I came away like, he's really a good dude.
A good dude. Yeah. I wouldn't say it just to say it. It's not for that. But enlightenment comes from the process, through the experiences, that exposure. And I don't think he's fully there yet. Mm-hmm. He needs to know that in business and in relationships, people are horrible at landing the plane. Yeah. We're great at taking off. The infatuation when you first meet somebody, when you just get drafted. Mm-hmm. Even at a cruising altitude, when things are rolling. But when it's time for this thing to come to an end, just check your relationships and check how you are in business. People don't want to tell you this thing is coming down. They wait for it to crash. And he has to understand that that's how the NFL works. Yeah. They have two war rooms, not one. Everyone always talks about the war room. It ain't the war room. There are two. I saw it in San Diego. One is the college prospects. Who we going to draft? Mm-hmm. Who's out there? The other one is active NFL players. Bro, I walked in there and saw Peyton Manning up there. You're like, whoa. And then it's impossible to get them, but they always are in position. Yeah. And knowing, just in case. Odell, realize the reality. We're all expendable, bro. Mm-hmm. Don't get caught up in that part.
So the best thing Baker Mayfield can do is he got to get Njoku in a room with Odell, with Jarvis Landry, with Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt. Get all of them in the room and make them understand, listen, I know we all want to win. I know we all want to be great. But the only way this thing works is we're all unselfish. Because there's only one football in that field, right? You got a ton of talent around you. And I think we'll see a much more free Odell this year if he can grasp that concept. Because there's something to be said when you can look to the other side of the field, you see Jarvis Landry also making one-handed catches, right? You see Njoku going up over top in the end zone, scoring touchdowns. You see Nick Chubb running through tackles for 30, 40 yards down the field. So he has to understand, I got to be as unselfish as possible so that we can get to the next level.
Marcel, I just want to make this point quick. I loved your point earlier about the fame game, and I buy your point that interacting with Odell Beckham Jr., he's a very impressive person and likable person. And so I think when you have real interactions with people, you see their real selves, and then, but the public sees you in the media space, in the fame game, where you're a different person, and maybe that's where he's getting criticism. All right, well, I'm back to Speak for Yourself. Before we go further, I'd like to offer some advice to Eric Dickerson and the other Pro Football Hall of Famers who are considering boycotting this year's induction ceremony. Don't do it. Please don't do it. Mm. Don't do it to Tony Gonzalez, Ed Reed, Champ Bailey, Ty Law, and the other 2019 inductees. They're joining the most elite brotherhood in professional sports. It would be a shame if their most cherished day in sports is overshadowed by a Hall of Fame boycott. Last week, during a Charlotte radio interview, Dickerson reiterated his position from a year ago that he and a handful of other Hall of Famers would protest the NFL's treatment of its former players by boycotting this year's induction ceremony. Appearing on WFNZ, Dickerson said the NFL treats its former players like outcasts. Take a listen.
A lot of guys have talked about it, but, you know, we try to start doing something about it. And one of the things we're doing, I mean, is we're possibly not, a lot of us are not going to the Hall of Fame this year. No one is aware of how badly the players are treated and done. And I think when people think football, they think automatically, he's a rich guy. He's rich. And guys aren't rich. I mean, the guys now, some of the guys, not all of them, some of the guys are making some real money. But in our era, you know, base salary was $40,000.
All right, this is nothing more than birth certificate envy. I get it. I had it this weekend in Las Vegas. I looked out across the Dre's Beach Club and thought to myself, oh, the fun I could have if I was 25 years old with this pocket full of cash. Mm. Revenue and salaries have exploded in the NFL since Dickerson retired 26 years ago. Players who won't get a whiff of the Hall of Fame can earn more in one season than Dickerson made in his entire career. And they can earn that money playing in a league that is far more soft than the one Dickerson, Lawrence Taylor, and Dick Buck has played in. Does the NFL owe the old-timers reparations? Maybe. The success of the modern NFL was built on the backs of the crudely violent game the old-timers played. They're dealing with the consequences of that violence without having fully enjoyed the financial benefits of it. I get Dickerson's motivation. I disagree with his tactics. A Hall of Fame boycott is not the right solution. The Hall is the one organization that treats the old-timers pretty well. Dickerson and his supporters need a well-stated plan of action. They need to be fighting to make their cause part of the new collective bargaining agreement the league is currently negotiating with the current players' union. The burden of taking care of the old should fall upon all the people benefiting from their sacrifice. I'm talking about the owners and the current players. Rather than boycott, Dickerson should rally 20 to 30 of the Hall of Famers and hold a press conference at this year's induction ceremony. There needs to be a collective voice promoting this issue, not a single one. All right, joining me now, Reggie Bush, TJ Houshmandzadeh. Marcellus, I'll start with you. Instead of boycotting, should Dickerson, is this boycott a good strategy?
No, it's not a good strategy. I'm lock and step with you and your sentiments. I don't like being adversarial from hello. In any negotiation, any problem, like from just you always have in your back pocket, we can end this and this could end not peacefully. We get it. We could beef it out. We could boycott. But from hello, it just seems adversarial. One, I understand his feelings. I understand his reality, a harsh reality for many former players. But you also have to approach it like we do in business. You got to have an idea, which is cute. Not great, it's cute, because the idea needs to be executed with a plan, with actual focus points. What are those details? And I'll tell you why this doesn't land properly with me right now, despite me loving Eric Dickerson, the Hall of Famers, my fraternity of football. I just got my consolidated benefits package. Anybody get that this week? I got mine. Oh, it's gonna, if I survive and live, it's a beautiful day tomorrow. And just looking at that package, just having this conversation with my wife, like, hey, this is bonus money. You don't even know this exists. Here you go. And I understand that's different for every guy based on their tenure, based on when they played. But at the same time, I've learned this from my experience as a player rep. We have greater resources available for players than they take advantage of. And there are many line items I could bore you to death with.
But why do you think that is, though?
Because you know what? I think it's easier as a response to say you're not doing for me instead of saying what are you doing for yourself? And are you in Washington? Are you making those calls? Are you checking your benefits package? Are you really trying to work in terms of the legislation to change these numbers instead of just the emotional response?
But my question is if they don't take a stand at the ceremony, then where do they take a stand? Because to me, for the Hall of Famers to take a stand during the ceremony, that might be the best place for them, right, to take that stand, right? And maybe we may not all agree on that, but I do agree. Lifetime health insurance should be a priority, for especially for retired guys, for guys who are in the Hall of Fame, because, as you know, we all going to have some form of knee replacement, hip replacement,
right,
or back surgeries or something like that, something else like that. And if you don't have that proper job to take care of that, then you paying a lot of money for a surgery that you got while you were playing in the NFL.
Right.
For me, we've talked about this. I was a player rep for years. And what Dickerson and all these Hall of, we all looked up to these guys. And they're the best to ever play the game of football. Is you have to talk to the current players now. We're all going to be retired at one point, which we are now. The players that are playing now, you're all going to be retired at one point. Mm. And so as you say, oh, I'm doing for the players of yesterday, you're actually doing for yourself for tomorrow. When you give to the guys that have come before you, that benefits you when you're that guy. And the players don't really pay attention to that. I mean, I remember being in the league and having to force a guy to do his 401k. He refused to do it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, you're doing it. They match 2-for-1.
2-for-1?
I'm not giving up $21,000. I'm like, they're gonna match you 2-for-1. You're doing it. He's doing it. Yeah. Like, he was literally wanting to fight me over that. Mm-hmm. And so that's where they need to start.
The
Hall of Famers need to start with the current players that are a player rep on the executive committee, because everybody's gonna be retired at one point. And health insurance, if you played 8 years or more, I don't care who you are. You should have lifetime medical insurance because the problems creep up and they don't have, you're talking about they have, it's expensive to have a certain, they don't have the money to pay for it.
No. Mm-hmm.
Can I make this point really quick? Because the one thing that I feel like is where we are losing as players is we don't have our superstars a part of the NFLPA. To me, a big part of the reason why the NBA is head and shoulders above the NFL is because their superstars are part of the Players Association. Chris Paul is a part of the Players Association. LeBron James is a part of the Players Association.
Their union is head and shoulders above
the union, union. Yeah. Yeah, so when you go to that negotiating table with the owners, with the league, there's a different level of respect. There's a different conversation.
Drew Brees used to be in, when I was playing, Brees was in, he was on the executive committee. When I played and I was a player rep, Brees was the only star player involved. Brady was involved, but it was, he was involved. Brady was involved. I will, because I was there.
Yeah, we've seen it over time that there's been like sprinkles of our superstardom in the executive committee. What we're not talking about is the dynamic because of the non-guaranteed contracts that players don't execute with foresight. The CBA that you currently will sign, Eric Dickerson and those guys in the 90s, they don't sign with the foresight because, let's be real, there's a collective culture of like, I gotta get mine because it's not even guaranteed whatever mine is.
Right, right.
So when you start to now get into your latter years, you start to say, oh, was that the smartest thing to do? Mm-hmm. You can't go back.
Too late.
And too late. So look, I don't know if these guys even know about their line of duty benefits. I don't even know if they know about
they
using their 250,000, depends on your years, but I didn't play forever, $250,000 towards your insurance to get you to a Cobra package that can get you somewhere, and it's abbreviated. There's so many levels, I hate to say it. Talking to executive committee members, a lot of times they say, our phone's not ringing like you think, but the complaints are.
Last thing, I gotta be quick. I need a collective voice. I like Eric Dickerson, but he needs a group with him in the messaging. It can't be one guy. Uncle Jimmy's here. He made it back from Las Vegas alive.
Oh, yeah, was it ever a doubt in your mind who I wasn't coming back? Hell, let's get to the big dummy of the day.
Go ahead.
Marcellus.
Uh-oh.
Who the hell goes to Las Vegas and get knocked out 2 hours before the fight?
That was funny.
Who does this?
Wally, come get these tickets.
Of course. Hey, it ain't over. We coming back.
Man. Wait.
All right, here's a highlight from our discussion
too soon?
Earlier about Pacquiao. Don Julio knocked me out, and I missed the fight.
Yes.
These three guys.
Don Julio knocked him out in the first round.
These three guys went to the fight.
Boy, it was funny. It was about 6 o'clock. Wiley, here are the tickets. I was like, Willock, you coming? Oh, boy, went to bed at 7 o'clock.
We had a discussion about Pacquiao and what a great performance. I don't know, they're making fun of me instead of talking about Pacquiao. Your thoughts on Manny and his big performance over Keith Thurman?
Well, first of all, I'm going to be honest. Thank you. I had a chance to experience my first fight ever, and I enjoyed it.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
You know, and I was honored to be there firsthand to witness Manny spank that ass.
Mm. Oh,
you know, but what old people say? Hey, he took that ass to the woodshed. You understand? I love it anytime an old man can whoop a little snotty-nosed kid's ass. You know, this was a weekend for the ages. This was a weekend for old folks.
All right.
You know, me and Manny both showed up and showed out. You understand what I'm saying? I told y'all what Manny was going to do. Y'all didn't listen to me. See, because me and Manny developed us a little friendship. Didn't nobody want to listen to me. You know? You know what I'm saying?
You and Manny became friends.
Me and Manny became friends. We built up a little friendship.
When was this?
You know, we used to go to our little, we got a little restaurant we hang out at now, MGM, you know, my grandma's. He set up and had him a little, he had a,
my
Boston ball soup and a croissant, you know.
Do you have any thoughts about
that? No, I'm just trying to, look, quit rushing me. I'm telling about me and Manny. I'm telling how Manny won the fight.
How?
I'm the one that helped Manny. I told him how to deal with them little Thundercats. Told him, man, you got to hit him in the belly, man. You got to hit him hard. You know, just walk up and just boom, try to make him lose his stool. I said, Manny, hit him hard. He said, I hit him hard? Hit him hard, man. I said, Manny said, we about that life? We about that life. Frip. And that's when you seen him do like this? He looked up at me. Hey, I kick his ass. Look here, man, let me tell y'all something. Whether it's in the pool or whether it's in the ring, Manny, it's all about that respect. He did that reshuffle. He said, put some respect on my name. Hey, Manny whooped Thurman's ass just like I whooped y'all's ass the moment I walked into Dre's. But don't y'all ever challenge Uncle Jimmy again. Uncle Jimmy walked in. I said, damn, I said, if you like it, don't fight it. If it thrill you, don't let it kill you. Because my reputation precedes me. You understand me? You know this. You don't know, Marcellus.
What?
But let me tell you something. When I bust out this rug, God damn it, it's time for love. I would say I wasn't up there in the old executive suites like y'all.
Cabanas.
Uncle Jimmy was down there with the common folk, out there amongst my flock, my rod and my staff to comfort them. You understand? I'm doing the Lord's work.
Where was the
book? The good book says, if you see a woman that's unclothed, remove your clothing and cover her. That's what I was doing. I was out there touching them. And some of them touched me too. And let me tell y'all this. Whether y'all realize or not, did my big girl show up?
Oh.
The blue M&Ms.
My big girl showed up and showed out.
Oh, there
the
it
big
is.
The blue M&Ms flew in from Chicago. Mm. Hey, boy, they showed out. And each one of them bought Uncle Jimmy a care package. Every one of them. Hey, man, you seen Tupperware and Ziploc bags floating all in the pool. Boy, they brought me everything from an open-faced turkey sandwich, it's a little soggy, to some oyster dressing. Kind of like them $2,000 French fries you ate that time. What you say? Tastes like Haagen-Dazs, huh?
You remember that.
Hey, I'm going to be honest with y'all, man. I might have met my calling, man. What? I met a young woman, man. She said she's from Kansas City. I think she's from Uzbekistan.
Uzbekistan.
Yeah, she asked me would I be interested in sponsoring her education. She want to be a doctor.
I'm sure.
And she said she want to be a proctologist. I'm be honest with you. Google it.
Oh man.
But all right. I told her, baby.
Here's my approval rating for Manny Pacquiao. Here's my approval rating for Manny Pacquiao.
Vegas.
I got him at a 79, 24 job performance, 23 all-time greatest.
I'm going next week.
19 character, 13 authentic. He's a politician. I had to knock him for authenticity.
I hear that part, but he has to be a GOAT. That's Manny Pacquiao. Eight-time division champion. Eight different divisions. Kept getting bigger and better. You got to give him love. 24, 25 in terms of his greatness. Character 16. I love the person at the same time.
They
love
me twice.
A lot of smoke around politicians. So
I like
gotta give him that. 84, though, a GOAT.
I like him chunky.
I don't know if we're ever taking Uncle Jimmy back to Las Vegas. Well, the show will be back tomorrow. Thank you. That's it.
The motor. Yeah.